So the con I've chosen to speak about today isn't one of my favorite cons. In fact, it's one I just encountered recently. But it struck me with so much force that I thought it would be, for me anyway, personally, a good way to start out the series of talks on koans that began last night with Josh's teshel. So this one doesn't appear in any of our Boundless Way Zen koan collections. It's actually a koan that was collected by Dogen Zenji and his collection of 100 koans, sometimes called the Shinji Shobugenzo. And there it's number 61, and here it's in the translation I'm going to use, it's in a chapter in his Shobugenzo called Miracles. And the chapter is one that I hadn't been familiar with myself, but since I've been reading it, I've been very inspired by it. And I think you'll understand why he calls this chapter Miracles, and he uses this koan as an example of what he calls greater miracles in Zen. Lesser miracles are walking on water and having fire come out of your head and having water come out of your hands. Those he calls the lesser miracles. Here's an example of the greater miracles. And it's about the teacher Guishan, who was a Chinese master. One day, while Guishan was lying down, Hangshan Huiji came to see him. Guishan turned around and faced the wall. Yangshan said, "I'm your student. Please don't be formal." Guishan started to get up, and Yangshan rose to leave. Guishan said, "Huiji." Yangshan returned. Guishan said, "Let me tell you about my dream." Yangshan leaned forward to listen. Guishan said simply, "Would you interpret my dream for me? I want to see how you do it." In response, Yangshan brought a basin of water and a towel. Guishan washed his face and sat up. Then Xian Yan came in. Guishan said, "Huiji and I have been communicating intimately. This is no small matter." Xian Yan said, "I was next door and heard you." Guishan said to him, "Why don't you try now?" Xian Yan made a bowl of tea and brought it to him. Guishan praised them, saying, "You two students surpass even Shariputra and Madgalayana with your miraculous activity." So that's the whole story. And I want to go through it a little bit in more detail just to reflect on some of these lines that hearing it once might have passed you by. But maybe some of them, like with me, really hit you directly. Some of them penetrated for me so much because my experience of being a Zen teacher with students like all of you is one of the great experiences that I am grateful for every day. It's not a small thing, as Guishan says. It's no small matter to be able to sit here in this beautiful place with other people who are devoted to this way. And, of course, you might be doing the thing that we all do, which is saying she couldn't be talking about me. But I am. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about every single person who's even sat down once to look deeply into the nature of reality. Anyone who's willing to come in the middle of a busy day, Monday, like some of you have come, and be here for part of the Ango. Any of you who have devoted, actually as many of us in this room, have devoted all 3 weeks of our busy lives to this Ango. This is no small matter. And although we all are unique and incredibly varied in our personalities and in our ways of doing things and ways of being, the place where we all connect is in this full commitment to being Zen students, to being people of the way. And my gratitude rises up so often. My gratitude for David and the other teachers in Boundless Way Zen, now for James Cordova, for all of you who have taken on roles here at this Ango and who take on roles at Sesshin of leadership, people who are on the leadership council, on various committees, and people who just show up and sit and with your presence teach. Every time one of you comes into the Zendo, I'm so grateful. And I'm grateful not for who you might be at some future moment or who you could be if you only dot, dot, dot. But I'm grateful for who you are now. The gifts that we all bring to the great fabric, to the great interweaving that we call the Sangha, the community of practitioners. So in this koan, when I came across it, and I came across it actually in a magazine article, in one of those Buddhist magazines, and then I tried to find it, and I couldn't find it in any of our koan collections, and I was so pleased to find that it was important to Dogen, that Dogen, who has this reputation for not working with koans, of course worked with koans extensively. He was a koan master. He had he penetrated many, many koans, uses them in all of his writings, even in the Genjo koan, that seminal text that some of us have studied very closely. He ends with a story, a Zen story, a koan. And here in this chapter on miracles, he talks about the miracle of the connection of one human being with another, and not just any human being, but a teacher with two of his students. And both of these students of Guishan, Yangshan and Xianyan, became great teachers themselves. Guishan, sometimes called Isan in Japanese, was quite a famous Zen teacher in his own right, a great student of his own teacher, who you might remember, he's the guy who was the head cook and was asked to demonstrate something or other with a water pitcher, and he just knocked it over and was praised by his teacher. So very direct teacher, very powerful, strong person. But here, I don't know when this happened in his life because it doesn't appear in Zen's Chinese heritage or any of the histories I've been able to find about Guishan. Here in this story, he was just lying down. He was, maybe we could read into it, tired. Maybe he'd been doing a lot of teaching, doing a lot of doksan, organizing things. Who knows what he was doing, holding in his arms the welfare of the Sangha as we do. But he was lying down, and his student, Yangshan Huiji, came to see him. And I have to say that this next line is really sweet to me. Guishan turned around to face the wall. Even though I really am committed to every single one of you, every once in a while when I'm doing Doksan, oh, just so much is happening in my interior life that I just like to turn around and face the wall. But I don't. Or maybe sometimes I do internally, and you can probably tell. I don't do it much. Guishan turned around to face the wall. And now if I did that to you, if you came in to see me in Doksan, I wonder what you would do. Maybe you'd go away, which would be its own sweet thing. But maybe you wouldn't. Maybe you'd sit there and you'd wait and you'd see what I was doing. You'd say, what's going on? This isn't what's supposed to happen. Maybe you'd tap me on the shoulder. Maybe you'd just sit for a while until I turned back to face you. Yangshan is a person demonstrated in this koan who I find to be a great spirit. He's also, there are many stories, wonderful stories about Yangshan, both as a student, as a friend to other students of Guishan, and also just a great teacher in his own right. He says, I am your student. please don't be formal. Oh, that's great. I just love hearing that. You know, come forward. Like, don't fool around. Don't pretend. Don't come in. Don't plan what you're going to say in doksa. I say this all the time, but I know we all do it. But just show up. Just show up. I'm your student. Oh, what sweet words those are. That means not, you know, in some kind of weird teacher-student hierarchical relationship, but I am willing to be in your presence and open my heart to you so that you can open your heart to me and we can be in this together. That's how I hear Yangshan's words. I am your student. Please, don't be formal. Don't play some Zen teacher trip on me. I am your student. Please, don't be formal. So Guishan started to get up. I mean, he was responding. He was doing what Yangshan said. Maybe he was going to leave the room. Maybe he was going to turn around. We don't know. But Yangshan also rose to leave. And then Guishan called to him, not by his formal name, but by his second name. Huiji, he says, which I don't know what that really is supposed to sound like in Chinese, but to me it sounds affectionate. Not calling him by his formal name, but calling him Huiji, as he was known. And Yangshan returned. He responded. It's what we look for as well. Here I am, and I'm responding to whatever you ask, whatever you say, whatever you do. I'm responding. I'm returning. And then this is the point that I think the koan really revolves around. Guishan says, let me tell you about my dream. So maybe Guishan was sleeping when he was lying down and he had just woken up from a dream. And you know how it is when you just wake up from a dream. Sometimes you just can't wait to tell somebody about it. And I've had the experience over many years of telling people dreams and hearing dreams. It can be pretty boring to hear somebody else's dream. It can be so flat. The experience itself is so vivid and resonant. And we wake up, and then we want to tell about it. We want to go into this delusive realm, this realm of imagination. Let me tell you about my dream. And Yangshan leaned forward to listen. Can you feel that in your whole body? He leans forward to listen. He's interested. He's not thinking to himself, oh God, I have to listen to somebody's dream. Probably no hesitation at all. Just, you had a dream? You want me to hear it? Here I am. He says this over and over again in many different ways. Here I am. I'm your student. Don't be formal. And then he leans forward. And Guishan says, simply, would you interpret my dream for me? I want to see how you do it. So all of us, of course, you know this, are living in a dream world. We're doing our best to wake up to reality, but we constantly get sucked in. I don't know what your dream is, but I'm not just talking about dreams we have when we sleep, but the dreams we live in when we're awake. The dream of, I'm no good, here we go again, there I go again. The dream of, why can't I be like that? The dream of, I wish that things were different. Most of us spend the large majority of our time in that kind of dream world. Not the dream world of the actual showing up as ourselves, but the dream world of pretending that the thoughts and the emotions that constantly course through our mind and body and heart are more real than the person sitting opposite us, more real than the sunlight on the floor of the zendo, more real than the coolness of the air on our skin. We get so lost in our dreams. And of course, there's a very long tradition in many, many cultures of interpreting dreams, helping people going in to explore all the different meanings of the dream and helping people to maybe make more peace with themselves, have more insight into themselves. But in Zen, we're not so interested in that kind of dream interpretation. In Zen, we're interested in waking up from the dream. Waking up from the dream, not as a metaphor, but actually waking up from the dream of some self that looks this way and smells that way and acts that way. Waking up to who we really are. Underneath all of it, the light that everyone has that shines through, as Yunnan says somewhere, everyone has their own light. It shines through the layers and layers and layers of personality and history and habits. And it's visible. It's most visible when we sit in Zazen. It's very visible when we show up for Dogsan. So here's the teacher saying, "Would you interpret my dream for me?" Which is a real come on if you think about it. And I want to see how you do it. The hook has an extra hook. And in response, and please feel the quality of Yangshan's response here. In response, Yangshan brought a basin of water and a towel. How loving, how tender, how kind. No matter what Guishan's state was at that moment, he had just woken up from a dream, he had turned away from his student. Yangshan asked him to turn back, and he didn't fall for the trap of, "Oh, sure, I'd love to hear your dream. Let me tell you who you are and what it's all about." He just saw what was needed, and he went and got a bowl of water and a towel. And Guishan, the teacher, washed his face, and then he sat up, which in itself is an equal response. So there they are, Guishan and Yangshan, meeting each other completely, meeting each other intimately. Then the second student comes in, the third character in the story, Xiangyan, another student of Guishan's. And Guishan says to him, "Huiji and I have been communicating intimately. This is no small matter." So this is his commentary on Yangshan's response. He feels the intimacy. Maybe you, as we encourage people to do when they work with koans, we encourage people to enter into all of the personalities in the koan. So entering Guishan, the teacher just waking up from sleep, turning away. Entering Yangshan, the responsive student who brings the bowl of water. And now we have Xiangyan, who comes along, and Guishan says, "Yangshan and I have been communicating intimately. This is no small matter." And Xiangyan says, "I was next door, and I heard you." The walls were made out of paper, so everything was open. No secrets, nothing hidden. "I was next door, and I heard you." And you can feel, even though the words are so simple here, and this translation has been through many centuries and many people and many languages, from Chinese to Japanese to English. "I heard you. I heard you. Even though you two thought you were alone, I was there too." Here is another example of the jewel of Sangha. "I heard you. I was next door." So Guishan invites him in and says, "Why don't you try now?" And Xiangyan has his own response. He makes a bowl of tea and he brings it to his teacher. And then Guishan prays them both, and he compares them to two of the disciples of the Buddha, Shariputra and Madgalayana. For some reason, a hard name for me to pronounce. two people who were known, in fact, for, in my recollection, Shariputra was known for his wisdom, and the other guy, Madgalyana, was known for his spiritual powers, his capacity to perform miracles. And so he says, you two surpass even Shariputra and Madgalyana with your miraculous activity. So the performance of miracles, if we ever came to Zen or Buddhist practice to get something for ourselves, to be other than we are, to have the capacity to be calm and centered and happy all the time, to be wise, to be compassionate, all of these things, of course, come with practice, but they never last. Our capacity to be wise and to be compassionate grows as the years go on, but it doesn't mean we don't fall into hell realms on a regular basis. Even as teachers, even as senior students, everyone I know, unless they're pretending to not be human, and some people do fall into that trap, which is very sad, and those people do lots and lots of harm, and I've personally known one or two people like that. The reality is that thoughts, emotions, and sensations continually course through the body and mind without stopping, endlessly. They're endless, and every once in a while they contain a hook that will catch us. And then we can spend a lot of time thinking, I'm no good, or Zen is stupid, or whatever it is we occupy ourselves with. But if we can know that in those moments the requirement is to become intimate with those things, just the way Yangshan and Xiangyan became intimate with their teacher, Guishan, this is all that's required. Not to be some other person, but to be the person we truly are. As Josh mentioned last night, the non-attained Buddha. What a gift that is, to be the one without attainment, to be the one who is awake. A non-attained Buddha is awake to not attaining. Guishan just woke up from a dream. Yangshan brings him a basin of water and a towel. Xiangyan brings him a bowl of tea. These are the miracles of Zen. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
I find it really ironic. This is the first koan I ever heard before practicing Zen, before sitting without Zen. It's recited in an audio program called Breath Sweeps Mind by Jokushin Kwong, who's a...
That's where I read it. Yep. I read a text by him.
It immediately, before I even practiced Zen or Zazen, it immediately struck me as this incredible power of the communing between these people. And so often in my life, and I'm sure people can relate to this, is that you'll be talking with someone and it's like, you know, I'm thinking, well, where's this conversation going? You know, I got places to go. It's a point, you know. And especially with my children, you know, something that's happened. And then I realize, like, I remember this koan. It's like, wait. You know? And that just, it's a beautiful, beautiful koan. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
I mean, it's kind of a miracle that you came today. It's a koan, you know? Like,
it is one of those miracles,
yeah. And I too was struck by the community and how you know, we don't know our effect on other people. So the fellow who's in the other room. Yeah. You know, I heard you, you know, and...
Yes.
John Long. And so we can, like, as Sangha, you know, we interact with each other, and or we don't even interact. We just be ourselves. And it has affects people in ways that we never know. And I always remember when the very first sesshin I went to was at Daigusatsu Zendo in upstate New York. I didn't know anybody. And there was a woman there who, to this day, I see her in my mind. And she was a monk, and she was very tall, and she wore robes, and she had a shaved head. And whenever she sat down, she just sat. And so not to idealize her, but, you know, it was just like, she didn't make choices about, you know, doing this and that and everything. She just sat, and it just struck me like, wow, that person, you know. Meanwhile, I'm fidgeting all over the place, my first sesshin. And so here it is, you know, 20-something years later, and I still remember her. She has no idea who I am or how I noticed her, but all of us, you know, whenever we're together, just have no idea what... Thank you.
I was struck, it took me the second time through to actually catch all parts of it. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I had this picture of some routine that has happened every afternoon or every morning. The teacher wakes up, the attendant comes in with a little bowl of water and towel, and then another attendant comes in with tea. Mm-hmm. So either something entirely extraordinary is happening just now, or it's so ordinary that it doesn't require any comment. And all of them had done this, even the third person rushing in, you know, I heard you, you're up, you know, could have been happening over and over again, months, weeks, years going by with the same routine. So is this different or is it not different?
Yeah, well, I think you're right, Wayne. I hadn't thought about it, but of course, in those days, that would probably be habitual behavior of students. Wow, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. I won't get lost in it. just tomorrow morning, I'm expecting.
Yeah, right.
Right, it's a shoe show, I think. but you know that I think the one little switch in it is he turned away, right? What? Then that could have been just and also the dream. I had a dream.
I want you to interpret for me. Well, that could be happening.
Could be happening all the time.
Both of those could be happening. Yeah. And we're just missing what was actually going on.
Yeah, right.
And so they're hinting at it. You know, somehow.
Yeah. Well, and I think Dogen talks in this chapter later. He talks about, you know, the different kinds of miracles. You know, he's comparing, like, the miracle of just the everyday, the student is supposed to come with a basin of water and the towel, and to, you know, there's some sutras, Mahayana sutras, where people do miraculous things, and, you know, fire shoots out of their head. And he calls those the lesser miracles. And then he quotes Laman Pan about carrying wood, what is it, chopping wood and carrying water as the great miracle. And in Dido Laurie collected the made commentaries and verses on the 100 koans of the Shinji Shokugenzo, and he also refers to Laman Pong and, you know, the great miracle of just ordinary activity. You know, and I think about the woman at Daibazatsu. I just wonder if that's Shinge Roshi, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Might be. You know, the very ordinariness of every single thing, coming into the zendo, bowing, coming over to your seat, bowing, turning around, bowing. You know, it seems like you're trying to get to the next thing. I'm trying to get to sit down. But all of those things are in themselves important. And that often happens in Doksan, too. People rush in the door. None of you do that. People rush in the door and, you know, start talking immediately. And it's okay to just, you know, take your seat, bow, to do your bows, take your seat. There's something important about the ordinariness of that, and it's miraculous that that we can even bow, that we can even take our seat. There's not to make it fetishize it or anything, but it's kind of amazing, and we take it for granted. We're always thinking about the next thing, usually.
Well, and I think in this particular interaction, something happened that made somebody write it down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think of, at every moment it's here, but every once in a while it breaks through. You know, you're with that friend who you've had, conversations with forever, and suddenly, and there's no telling why, you're together. Right, or with our children or our parents or something, partners, that those moments that aren't predictable, can't be commanded, that are perfectly ordinary, and yet everything is different. Suddenly we enter into the appreciation of this miracle. And it's not different from ordinary, but it shines through.
Well, it makes me think the moment that happens, and we've all had moments like this. That's waking up from the dream, that there are these little moments when we're not in hell anymore, and we're not in a realm, we're not anywhere, but just directly here, and there's everything drops away, and then of course almost always with the next thought we go, oh, this must be one of those moments, and then we're lost again in another hell realm of self-praise, but just those little moments, mm-hmm. that is waking up from the dream. Mm-hmm. We're in the dream almost all the time, 100% of the time, 99% of the time, okay, we're in the dream, and we can't make it happen. I think that's the other piece of it. We have to go forward with our ordinary activity, not hoping that we'll have these little moments of waking up, but when they arrive, we want to be there for them. We don't want to miss them. And they're happening all the time. Yeah.
So it also occurred to me, perhaps there's nothing really special in him turning and facing the wall when a visitor is coming. I think, is there a koan like that where one of the teachers, as soon as he would hear a visiting monk come to his cabin, he would immediately get up and go sit facing the wall as the monk would enter to see him? And I wondered if that was sort of the formal procedure that he typically went through when he heard somebody coming from outside, that he would turn and face the wall, and that's the way he would be sitting when they came in the door to be with him. And I was wondering if perhaps the unusual thing here is more. It struck me that the dream is never told.
Right.
That the teacher was probably not normally asleep when his student came in, and here the teacher wanted to share his dream with the student, and the student just very gently, goes and gets him a basin of water and a towel and says, "Here, wake up. I don't need to hear your dream. Just. And then the other student does essentially the same thing and comes in with a cup of tea and says, "Well, let's wake up here." Neither one of them actually hears the dream.
Right. That's pretty cool. I like that part of the story. And, we can speculate all we want about what was really happening, but I think when you pull an insight like that out of it, that to really notice that nobody actually talks about the dream, and then you begin to see why somebody might have said, "Oh, did you hear what happened with Guishan and Yangshan the other day?" This is my continuing theory that all koans are just gossip. "Did you hear about this? Really?" Because the walls were paper thin, so everybody could hear what was going on.
Should we stop using the sleep machine?
Yeah, I know, right? I was going to say.
Keep the doors open. Well, I think in China at this time, too, Dzogchen wasn't done one-on-one. It was done in groups. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why we have so many stories like this, because everybody witnessed these interchanges. They either happened formally in the big hall, or they happened like casually, like this story. Yeah.
I think of Buddhism as a dream, Zen as a dream. Mm-hmm. So the teacher says, so Melissa just told us her dream. Right? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean? And I've had a dream, but this invitation of the teacher, so how do you interpret it? Right? It doesn't really matter what the dream was. How do you interpret this dream?